Chicago. They're in the suburbs and in the collar counties of Chicago, and there are now more than a dozen suburban towns around Chicago that have more than 50% Latino population, yet they have no Latino elected officials at the mayoralty levels or proportionally in the city councils. So the future of political representation and power of the Mexican and Latino community is really in the suburbs of Chicago. And that's true in cities across the country. It is in the suburbs that are the growth areas. The other important thing is that because the community is so young, the college age population has dramatically changed. 32% of all the college and graduate professional school students in Chicago are Latino, 32,000 of them, including 20,000 Mexicans, which means that's the future of higher education for not only Chicago, but for many cities across the country. So these are just some of the findings that we had in this report.
Juan, we're going to link to your report. Juan Gonzalez co-wrote the report, Fuerza Mexicana, the past, present, and power of Mexicans in Chicagoland, for the Great Cities Institute at UIC. That does it for our show. Juan is also the author of Harvest of Empire, History of Latinos in America. Happy birthday, Hannah Elias. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is now on Venmo. Follow us and send a donation anytime at KBOO Radio. That's at KBOO Radio. Thanks.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries will dismiss wage theft claims for people who make over $53,000 a year.
Multnomah County weighs building a new animal shelter.
And in national news, Congress passes a spending bill averting a potential government shutdown until December.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, September 25th, 2024. I'm Althea Billings.
And I'm Eliza Yurkov. Starting next month, the Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries, or BOLI, won't investigate wage theft if the person whose wages were stolen makes more than $53,000 a year. It sounds harsh, but BOLI has defended the decision, saying they're so swamped with the backlog of claims that they just can't get to all of them. This will mean 17% of cases will be dismissed without investigation. BOLI Commissioner Christina Stevenson told state lawmakers that wage theft claims have gone up dramatically since the beginning of the pandemic, 200% in the past 4 years. But there hasn't been the same growth in resources to investigate wage theft claims, leaving the office swamped with claims they can't get to. Northwest Labor Press reports that BOLI has around half the staff it had 40 years ago, and since then, Oregon's population has nearly doubled. BOLI is asking for more funding next year, a third more than they're currently getting, which might be a big ask for a state budget year that's expected to be tight. Commissioner Stevenson said in a statement, quote, "Every law passed to protect workers is only as strong as the agency that enforces it. Without adequate funding, the very laws designed to ensure fair treatment and safe working conditions for Oregon workers become hollow promises," end quote.
The Multnomah County Animal Shelter has been failing audits and providing substandard care to animals as far back as 2016. Now, officials are pitching a $60 million upgrade to their facility, or building a new one entirely. The animal shelter in Troutdale is working through over 100 recommendations from an audit they got last year after volunteers and staff raised the alarm about the poor conditions. That has included not feeding animals on time or cleaning their kennels regularly. There have also been allegations of poor management, leading to pets being adopted out to unsuitable owners or becoming regularly ill. Animal Services Director Aaron Grayheck says the current building is too small for the amount of animals they take in. The proposal would cost between $60 and $65 million and nearly double the square footage of the facility. There's more work to be done by Multnomah County Animal Services before they put a proposal to the county board. That's expected to be in March of next year.
Classified staff, workers other than teachers in schools, are calling for higher wages in Washington state. They say pay is so low, they're struggling to pay for necessities. Eric Tegedoff reports.
Workers in Washington state schools are spotlighting the need for higher wages as kids settle back into the classroom. Workers at the preschool through high school levels, known as classified staff, people other than teachers who help schools run, are paid low wages and sometimes work multiple jobs to stay afloat. That's why the American Federation of Teachers of Washington is campaigning for higher pay for classified workers. David Patton is a bus driver for the Renton School District and says some of his co-workers with families, for instance, are having a hard time getting by.
They're working that job on top of having to apply for state benefits or state help. That shouldn't happen these days. If you're working, you know, 40 hours a week, there shouldn't really be that struggle.
Patton said AFT Renton, representing classified staff in the district, was recently able to secure a new contract, but workers are still facing low wages. For example, he notes that nutrition service workers earn $26 an hour, too low, they say, after decades of work in the district. Patton says it took 8 months to hammer out a new contract for classified workers in Renton schools, and that his union nearly went on strike. He says many members were frustrated with the contrast between their pay and that of higher positions in the school district, such as the superintendents.
All we have money to do is pay our bills and make sure that we're able to make our mortgage, make our rent, and do those things while some of the other people that are sitting up there are able to do whatever they want to do. And they look at us when we're asking for maybe a 6% raise or 7% raise and telling us no and making us fight for it.
Patton says he and other classified workers ensure schools operate efficiently.
Being able to provide those services and make sure that those kids are there safely, getting to eat, the mechanics, making sure the buses are working, the plumbers and stuff, making sure the stuff at the schools are working. Without any of us, there is no school.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Washington State is stockpiling the abortion pill mifepristone to ensure residents will have access to the medication. Governor Jay Inslee says the state will maintain its first-in-the-nation stockpile of abortion drugs as insurance against future lawsuits seeking to ban the procedure nationwide or a second presidential term for Donald Trump. Last year, a federal lawsuit sought to restrict access to the abortion medication across the nation, saying the FDA shouldn't have okayed its usage 20 years ago. Inslee ordered the state's Department of Corrections to use its pharmacy license to buy 30,000 doses of the abortion drug mifepristone. The U.S. Supreme Court rejected that case in June, keeping mifepristone on the market, but the ruling left the door open to further legal challenges. Inslee said, quote, "Those who want to take away reproductive health for women, they're not going to stop last week, this week, or next week. It's a multi-decade effort," end quote. Trump's position on abortion rights is unclear and has been changing frequently, but he did appoint three Supreme Court justices who were instrumental in overturning Roe v. Wade after 50 years.
A new supported housing development will open tomorrow in Portland's Buckman neighborhood. Francis and Claire Place is 61 fully furnished studio and one-bedroom apartments that also provide on-site services. It's located on the grounds of St. Francis Catholic Parish across from Revolution Hall in southeast Portland. It will be operated by Catholic Charities of Oregon, the Native American Rehabilitation Association of the Northwest, and Cascadia Health. The apartments are for people exiting homelessness, and they'll have access to health care and case management at the site. Francis and Claire Place got funding from the Metro Supportive Housing Services measure passed by voters in 2020. Ed Langlois is with Catholic Charities of Oregon. Langlois said in a press release, quote, "People can move right off the street and into an apartment. It doesn't get more direct and immediate than this," end quote.
Congressional lawmakers pass a bill to avert a government shutdown. That legislation now heads to President Biden's desk. It ensures the federal government is funded through December, and it sends $230 million in emergency funding to the Secret Service. That last part follows a second attempt on Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump's life last week. Monday was the deadline for legislators to pass a bill to fund the government. Federal programs will continue to be funded at the current level until December 20th. This likely sets up a budget fight for December with some critical issues on the line. The Veteran Affairs Department needs an extra $12 billion to provide health care to veterans who were made sick by toxic burn pits. The Department of Agriculture's policy and spending is due for an overhaul. And spending reserves for federal disaster relief are also running low. Those issues and more will likely be picked up by Congress before their next deadline of December 20th.
Donald Trump threatens John Deere with tariffs for moving to Mexico. VP candidates talk about the Mark Robinson allegations. And President Biden gives his final UN General Assembly address. With more on these stories, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
They've announced a few days ago that they're going to move a lot of their manufacturing business to Mexico. I'm just notifying John Deere right now. If you do that, we're putting a 200% tariff on everything that you want to sell into the United States.
Former President Donald Trump says he'd impose huge tariffs on companies moving manufacturing out of the U.S. This comes as tractor company John Deere announced it's outsourcing some production to Mexico due to lower demand, and Trump has similarly promised stiff new tariffs on China. But the Mexico tariffs would violate the United States-Mexico-Canada trade agreement Trump signed in 2020, so imposing them would require congressional action. And despite being an ardent supporter of the former president, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell says he's opposed to protectionist trade policies.
I'm not a fan of tariffs. They raise the prices for American consumers. I'm more of a free trade kind of Republican that remembers how many jobs are created by the exports that we engage in.
Meanwhile, Republican vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance is remaining neutral on CNN's revelations about North Carolina gubernatorial candidate Mark Robinson. Reports allege Robinson made comments calling himself a black Nazi on a porn website and praised Adolf Hitler's book Mein Kampf. Despite the nature of the allegations, Vance says this is between Robinson and the people of North Carolina.
Now look, I've seen some of the statements. I haven't seen them all. Some of them are pretty gross. To put it mildly, Mark Robinson says that those statements are false, that he didn't actually speak them. So I think it's up to Mark Robinson to make his case to the people of North Carolina.
While campaigning in Pennsylvania, Democratic vice presidential candidate Tim Walz alluded to Robinson's impact on the entire GOP field.
We got folks running as Republicans for governor that are proud to refer themselves as Nazis. Let's not pretend that there's a gradual difference between the folks that are running here, that they're running together.
Nebraska Governor Jim Pillen says he won't call a special session to change how the state awards Electoral College votes, citing a lack of lawmaker support. Going to a winner-take-all system might have benefited Trump by lumping the blue-leaning 2nd Congressional District in with the rest of the deep red state. Jane Klebe, with Nebraska's Democratic Party, says the Republicans were desperate to make a last-minute rule change.
That means to us that they're obviously losing ground and they're desperate. What they should be doing is knocking doors, opening campaign offices, visiting with voters.
President Joe Biden gave his final address before the United Nations General Assembly. In his speech, Biden drew comparisons between America when he entered public service and when he'll leave next year. Along with addressing challenges like ending the wars in Ukraine and the Middle East, he spoke about his decision to not seek re-election.
It's time for a new generation of leadership to take my nation forward. My fellow leaders, let us never forget, some things are more important than staying in power. It's your people.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Multnomah County Commission candidate Vadim Mazierski. He's running in County District 1 against Megan Moyers. At 6, it's The Underground, produced by KBOO's own Youth Collective. Then at 7, PDX Progressive Talk Radio. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with a low of 56 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny with a high of 74. Today in history, in 1890, the U.S. Congress establishes Sequoia National Park. It's notable for its giant sequoia trees, including the General Sherman tree, the largest tree on Earth by volume. The quote of the day is from American author William Faulkner, who said, quote, "The aim of every artist is to arrest motion, which is life, by artificial means and hold it fixed so that 100 years later, when a stranger looks at it, it moves again, since it is life. Since man is mortal, the only immortality possible for him is to leave something behind him that's immortal, since it will always move. This is the artist's way of scribbling, 'Kilroy was here,' on the wall of the final and irrevocable oblivion through which he must someday pass."
A new health hub opening in South Dakota aims to reverse the doctor brain drain that tribes often experience. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. There's a new location for Native health in the Black Hills. The Great Plains Native Health Hub has opened in Rapid City with the support of Johns Hopkins University. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's C.J. Keene checks in.
The hub will offer new Native-specific healthcare options as part of the Johns Hopkins Center for Indigenous Health. Oglala Lakota doctor Donald Warren is the co-director of the Center for Indigenous Health.
Unfortunately, we have some of the worst health disparities in the nation right here in the Dakotas. And when we look at the American Indian population, average age of death is in the late 40s as compared to the rest of the population, which is late 70s. So we have about a 30-year difference in average age of death. And much of that is preventable. And when we think about preventable issues, we're dealing in the areas of public health and medicine.
He says a safe, trusting environment for Native health care is step one.
Our leadership team for the Great Plains Hub consists of all Lakota people. And I think in research and in healthcare and in community engagement, the messengers really matter. And what we're excited about is we have these new research projects that are studying Lakota populations, but it's led by an entirely Lakota research team. So we can't think of research in its silo. We have to look at this as an opportunity to provide more training for other community members who might be interested in healthcare careers.
Warren's colleague, research associate Dr. Courtney Clausen, says the hub will bring doctors from around the region to focus on specific local challenges.
Being located here within Rapid City is so beautiful. There are a ton of incredible team members that are located all across the nation, and so having the interconnections not only within from nation to nation, but within the communities located within South Dakota, we were able to meet with a lot of really great folks from the Great Plains region that are working within the healthcare area.
Another major draw of the hub, addressing brain drain by bringing PhDs back to Western South Dakota. For National Native News, I'm CJ Keene in Rapid City.
The Mashantucket Pequot Tribal Nation in Connecticut has been awarded a grant to help cut climate pollution. As Edwin J. Vieira reports, some say it's only the beginning.
It's part of the Environmental Protection Agency's Climate Pollution Reductions Grant Program. The funding will be spent on installing electric vehicle charging stations at government buildings around the reservation. Raheem Eliezer with the Mashantucket Pequot Tribal Nation hopes to install at least a dozen charging stations. He says the funding will help them reduce emissions in other ways.
We're also hoping to electrify some of the governmental fleet vehicles. We're hoping to do 13 of those, whether it's hybrid or fully electric vehicles.
Another project for the grant funding involves helping 34 people living on the reservation convert or support their gas-powered cars through a rebate program. He says reducing pollution from transportation has substantial health benefits. Connecticut's worsening air quality has increased asthma rates for Mashantucket Pequot tribe members. While the grant runs for 5 years, each project has its own timeline. Eliezer says electric vehicle charging stations are a big focus for the community. He thinks the new charging stations will encourage people to buy electric vehicles, but he says this is only the start since the Comprehensive Climate Action Plan outlines plans for other renewable energy projects.
The possibility or the interest of producing or generating energy from renewable resources such as solar. I know I have personally been looking into potentially thermal networking for the reservation.
He says creating a microgrid is also an option, with interest being shown by the community in diversifying energy generation. Eliezer notes that using one renewable energy source isn't sustainable in New England. I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Hundreds of thousands of Native Americans eligible for health care through the Indian Health Service were denied or deferred for over $500 million in care in 2022. That was due to continuing problems with the agency's referred care program. Kathleen Shannon has more in South Dakota.
Native Americans in South Dakota and across the U.S. are entitled to free health care, but KFF Health News reports a program meant to fill gaps in the system has its own problems. The Indian Health Service funds clinics and hospitals throughout the country for Native Americans to receive care. When that isn't possible, the agency's Purchase Referred Care Program pays outside providers for medical services in limited delivery areas, but many struggle to access them. Johnny Kroll of the Little Shell Tribe of Chippewa Indians of Montana lives 400 miles from her tribe's headquarters, a distance that disqualifies her. Kroll, a breast cancer survivor, worries about her lack of access.
They say you can receive direct care at any IHS facility. Okay, well, what if I'm in an emergency and I got to be transported somewhere else?
Congress budgeted nearly $7 billion for the IHS this year, but a recent agency report says it will need nine times that amount, or $63 billion, to cover patients' needs in 2026, including $10 billion for referred care. In 2022, referred care programs denied or deferred nearly $552 million of care for about 120,000 eligible patients. Connie Brushbreaker, a member of the Rosebud Sioux Tribe, says she's been denied funding or been waitlisted at least 14 times since 2018. She injured her shoulder 2 years ago.
I got to the point again where my husband was putting my hair up, even getting dressed. Can't wear sports bras because I can't lift my arm.
Brushbreaker was finally approved for funding and had surgery this July, 2 years after her injury and 4 months after her referral. The IHS is studying the possibility of statewide eligibility in the Dakotas. This story was produced with original reporting from Ariel Zients and Catherine Houghton for KFF Health News. I'm Kathleen Shannon, reporting for Greater Dakota News Service.
Vice President Kamala Harris says she supports eliminating the filibuster to codify Roe v. Wade, the federal abortion rights ruling that was overturned by the Supreme Court 2 years ago. Harris said, quote, "I think we should eliminate the filibuster for Roe and get us to the point where 51 votes would be what we need to actually put back in law the protections for reproductive freedom and for the ability of every person and every woman to make decisions about their own body and not have their government tell them what to do," end quote. Under current Senate rules, any senator can declare a filibuster, requiring 60 votes to hold a vote on a bill. Majorities in the Senate for either party have become increasingly tight, so funding a supermajority of senators to vote for a bill is near impossible. Many experts point to the filibuster as a key reason for Congress's inability to pass much legislation. They also say the filibuster is undemocratic. Washington Representative Pramila Jayapal said, quote, "Abortion access is under attack as extreme MAGA Republicans pass cruel laws to strip away our rights. Congress needs to step up and codify abortion rights, and we do that by ending the filibuster," end quote. Trump's campaign posted on social media yesterday that Harris's position on the filibuster is a, quote, "real threat to democracy," end quote.
California Governor Gavin Newsom signed several new gun control measures, expanding the state's restrictions on gun ownership and providing new protections for survivors of domestic violence. California already has some of the strictest gun laws in the U.S. Under the new laws, a judge can consider stalking, acts of animal cruelty, or threats of violence as evidence for a gun violence restraining order. The new laws also provide more protections for domestic violence survivors, including requiring law enforcement to take firearms away from offenders. Another law targets ghost guns by requiring law enforcement agencies to prohibit their contracted vendors from selling guns meant to be destroyed. Governor Newsom said, quote, "California won't wait until the next school shooting or mass shooting to act. In the absence of congressional action, our state is once again leading the way by strengthening our nation-leading gun laws," end quote. Oregon's own gun control ballot measure, 114, was passed by voters in 2022. It's been held up in legal challenges ever since and hasn't taken effect. Last November, a Harney County judge ruled the measure was unconstitutional, and currently the state is appealing that ruling. State Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum is asking the court to allow the measure to go into effect while the appeal process continues. Oral arguments in that case are expected later this fall. If and when the measure comes into effect, it would limit gun magazines to 10 rounds or less, require a permit to buy a gun, and require background checks.
In other California news, California residents will have a new benefit to their credit scores next year. Legislation that will keep most medical debt off of consumers' credit reports has been signed by Governor Gavin Newsom and will go into effect in January. Suzanne Potter has more.
Starting in January, medical debt will no longer count against millions of Californians' credit scores, thanks to a bill signed on Tuesday by Governor Gavin Newsom. Senate Bill 1061 will ban almost all medical debt from showing up on people's credit reports. Jen Engstrom is with the nonprofit California Public Interest Research Group, or CalPERG, which backed the bill.
Medical debt really does not belong on credit reports. Unlike other types of debt, medical expenses are not something that consumers can control. You know, you might get into a car accident or all of a sudden you have cancer and have these expenses.
The bill faced initial opposition from lenders who secured an amendment to exclude debt from specialty medical credit cards and debt for cosmetic procedures that are not medically necessary. The new law goes into effect in January. Engstrom estimates one in five Californians has unpaid medical debt, which she says saddles them in ways that go far beyond just having to pay it.
When medical debt ends up on your credit report, that makes it more challenging to apply for a credit card or a loan, you know, get a house and even some employment. And so that's why it's really important that California is now moving towards a fairer credit system.
In June, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau proposed a similar rule that would keep most medical debt off credit reports nationwide. It would also stop credit reporting companies from sharing medical debts with lenders and forbid lenders from making decisions based on medical information. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
A new financing model could speed up forest thinning projects. They can help reduce the risk of intense wildfires. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Thinning dense forests can help reduce the risk of intense wildfires as the climate warms. But getting forest restoration work funded can take a long time and hold up this critical work. So the nonprofit Blue Forest created a new approach to financing projects. Anna Yip of Blue Forest says private investors fund what's called a forest resilience bond. It provides the upfront capital needed for the Forest Service or other partner to do the restoration work.
The financing dollars allow for the implementation to happen at a faster pace.
The money is repaid over time by utilities or companies that benefit financially from a healthier forest. For example, a bond for a forest thinning project in California's Sierra Nevada mountains will be partially repaid by the local Yuba Water Agency. With fewer trees sucking up water on the landscape, more water can seep into streams that feed reservoirs. So the project is expected to boost water supplies and hydroelectric power generation downstream, which translates to revenue for Yuba Water.
They were able to see a net cost savings overall, even though they were investing dollars into this effort.
So Yip says this funding model can help speed up the process of creating fire-resilient forests. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael knows a lot of what he doesn't know.
There are a lot of things I don't understand, but most of them, like quantum mechanics or rocket surgery, have no direct effect on my life. But why enough people could vote for Trump as if we've just accepted his craziness, like a drunken uncle, but that uncle would never have access to the nuclear codes, is frightening. Not only because of what Donnie and Project 2025 could do, because it shows me how little I understand about people. I thought we had more in common. I understand why Israel's bombing the bejesus out of Lebanon and Hezbollah. While I don't think it's justifiable or sane, bullies just bring on more bullies. In these tech days, you can be a bully without ever seeing or caring who you kill. It was heartening to have an unexpected visit from a couple dozen migrating waxwings enjoying some of our plants' fruits just after I'd heard of a friend's unexpected early death. A lot fewer birds these days. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, September 25th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael and Don Merrill. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Suzanne Porter, Kathleen Shannon, Edwin J. Vieira, and Antonia Gonzalez. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eliza Yurkov.
And I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth. We'll be speaking with Multnomah County Commission District 1 candidate Vadim Mazirski.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community. I'm Don Merrill, and I'm talking with Vadim Mazirski. Mr. Mazirski is a candidate for the Multnomah County Commission. Vadim, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
So I guess the first question I wanted to ask you is why are you running for Multnomah County Commissioner, and which position are you running for?
I'm running for Multnomah County Commissioner District 1, which is all the west side and southeast, inner southeast. The reason I'm running, well, you know, when I ran for city council a couple of years ago, people kept asking me what I would do about homelessness and drug addiction, mental illness in our streets. And every year it gets worse and worse. But guess what? It's not up to city council to address those issues. That is what the county is responsible for. That is the main mission of the county, the human services. And so no matter what polls you look